Queridos hermanos y hermanas, dear friends, I can just imagine Mary and Joseph marching young Jesus home back to Nazareth with that rare combination of anger and relief that only parents would understand. Like us, says the epistle to the Hebrews, in all things but sin. I once commented that I never saw a picture of Mary frowning. She was always depicted with a kind of serenity that seemed to be distant from any other human emotion. And so I said I never saw a picture of her frowning. Well, Sister Navard out in Menominee Falls found this wonderful picture of Mary frowning, and included in a kind of Norman Rockwell type of imagery, a little Jesus with an impish smile on his face, caught in some kind of mischief. And then Mary frowning in this picture and shaking her finger at him for whatever it was that he was caught in the midst of. Like us in all things but sin. The gospel is about home. The feast is about home. And that conjures up for any of us, all of us, I hope, some kind of memories, because the Feast of the Holy Family wants to do that. The great American poet, Robert Frost, in one of his poems, said, home is where, when you go there, they got to take you in. And it's in the poem called The Death of the Hired Man. It's a classic. I still remember it a long time ago from high school English class. And in the midst of that Death of the Hired Man, he says, home is where when you go there, they got to take you in. So, you know, in some way, there's a sense of obligation that's associated with home, wherever it may be. And it's not only our obligation for what we call home, but home's obligation for us. When we go there, they got to take us in. For the most part, however, home is primarily a place. So someone says, well, where's home for you? I say, well, originally Racine. And people will say, oh, Racine, I can never find my way around that place. All the town, the roads go in different directions. I get constantly confused. I said, no, that's Waukesha. That's not Racine. Because Racine, I know exactly where all the streets are. They're on cow paths. I know it. That's home. That's Racine. Or you can say in a different way, where's home? And I say, well, 836 North Broadway. That's the rectory of Old St. Mary's. That's home for me. That's where comfort and security and my things, whatever they are, that's home. Often, it's a place. It's a place where we can go because they kind of take us as we are. Maybe they want us to be a little better or different, but they're willing to start with us as we are. It's a place where we can take our shoes off, be ourselves. There's a test called the MMPI, Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Interview Inventory. People of my vintage took it again and again in high school and college. It's a test to help determine what kind of profession or occupation or job might best fit our personalities. I learned later, after taking it for years, that there was a lie question in it, a very deliberate lie question. That asked something and waited to see how you would respond, because if you responded in one way, they knew you were lying, that you weren't telling the truth, and therefore the whole thing was skewed and it wasn't as helpful as it could be. At my time, and they changed the question periodically so you didn't get onto it, but in my time, the lie question of the MMPI was, I exercise the very same manners when I'm home alone in my kitchen as I do in a restaurant. And if anybody said, yes, I do, they said, you're lying. Either that or you're so pathologically problematic that this test isn't going to help you at all. because nobody really does that. And if we're in a moment of honesty, we say, well, there have been times when I licked off the spoon and put it back in the mayonnaise jar or in the jelly jar or whatever. You know, that was the lie factor. Home is home. And for many of us, it's an address. But not for everybody. Because sometimes families move around a lot. Either because of military deployment, for example, or economic uncertainty, they move around. And what that does is clarify that home is really the people, the network of people, not just the place, the house. It's the people associated with that house. That's home. The members of that early circle of family and friends who give us life and nourish us into maturity and independence. Sometimes that network is very loving and respectful and challenging and supportive. And sometimes it's kind of flawed and troubled with ragged edges of all sorts of, for all sorts of reasons. But it's the people that really make the home. These days, that circle of people becomes more and more extended and blended, as we say. Because of remarriage. And so there are all kinds of stepbrothers and stepsisters and the variety of families that come in because of remarriage. Families have always had a couple of odd characters that are part of the, you know, the blend. Either some neighbor that seems to be alone that gets invited in for Christmas and Thanksgiving and 4th of July, or some odd relative or so, and pretty soon they're exchanging gifts and they're part of the family. But these years, it's even more of a blended reality. They're part and parcel of the people that nourish us and take care of us and challenge us, and they're part of home. There's a saying, I stumbled on it not too long ago, that God gives us friends to apologize for our family. I think that's just a delightful part of the whole human experience. But let's go back to this morning's gospel, because all of that is background. It has a lot to teach us about family, this Holy Family Sunday. There is that annual religious pilgrimage to Jerusalem with family and friends, and Luke is determined that we never forget how blessed they were with their Jewish religion and their Jewish practices, that they went up to Jerusalem, that how seriously they took those Jewish practices, went up to Jerusalem for Passover. And they went up not with family and friends, not isolated. And in this case, from Nazareth to Jerusalem, it's about 70 miles. Up and down into valleys, that's a jaunt. That's not an easy trip. It's like here to Manitowoc, I suppose, or almost from here to Chicago. And they would go with money. They would go with money to pay for the sacrifices, sacrifices that they shared in. And they'd also go with money to pay, because you always gave alms for the poor when you went for Passover. Always gave alms for the poor. That was a requirement. And, you know, they would go and, like all families, they would resolve some of the debates that needed to be resolved, the disagreements or arguments or whatever. They would take them to the scholars in the temple and talk about things. So Luke wants us to remember that this family was deeply religious because they went for Passover, and that was no easy thing. Secondly, he makes a point of saying that Jesus was 12 because that's the time in Jewish practice when a youngster becomes a religious adult. Bar mitzvah, a son of the commandment, or in contemporary Jewish practice, bat mitzvah, a daughter of the commandment. And so at that point, you begin your own individual religious experience as a person at the age of 12. Luke makes a point of saying that. That's not a casual throwaway line or a little footnote in history. It's important. It's important religiously. And so he entered into personal conversation with the scribes and Pharisees. He astonished them with his questions and his answers and his questions. He never ceased astonishing people. And he insisted on staying in Jerusalem because that was part of his destiny. In St. Luke's Gospel, chapter 9, verse 51, he turns his face to Jerusalem and then begins the long public ministry of journey, teaching, curing, helping, questioning, until he once again comes back to Jerusalem for his destiny. He cannot stay away from that city because that's where God is calling him to be who he was called to be. It launched him into adulthood. He never was the same. Never stopped astonishing family and friends and disciples. And at one point, this is Mark's gospel, they come and they stand on the edge of the crowd and they say, "You come home." And in fact, Mark even says they kind of thought he was a bit out of his mind because of what he was doing. It was just so contrary to what families expected he would do. I wonder what Jesus learned from his human parents, like us in all things but sin. I wonder what he learned from Joseph, what he learned from Mary. I often think about my own parents. I recommend you do that too. What did you learn from your parents? I think I learned from my mother tolerance. She was a very tolerant woman. And I think I learned from my father precision, because he was a machinist. And he was an amateur gunsmith, and he made his own ammunition, and he polished his own and carved his own gun stocks, and he was very precise. And he would always say, "If you're going to do it right the first time." And then once in a while, I would say, "Well, I'm not ready to do it right today, so I'll do it tomorrow." But what did you learn from your parents? What did Jesus learn from his human parents that stayed with him, kind of part and parcel stamped on his personality? There's a side chapel down in Orlando, Florida, in the great Basilica of Mary, Queen of the Universe. It's a beautiful side chapel. And it's a chapel in which life-size figures of Joseph and Jesus are there. And Joseph is sitting on what looks like a park bench. It's not the whole park bench, but he's sitting on the bench part of it. And Jesus, as a young child, is kind of standing on that same thing. And they're in a conversation, the two of them. It's magnificent work of art, because you walk into this side chapel, it's near Epcot, and you suddenly feel like you're on the edge of a very personal conversation that's sacred. And they're looking at each other and they're talking. And you stand there and you wonder what they're talking about. Because there are moments in families, very precious conversations that are memorable, like us in all things but sin. So think today of all the memorable conversations in your own family, with friends, families, precious beyond all imagination, but never absolute or ultimate, because a family always exists to give us the right formation to launch us into whom we will become. And when Jesus' family tried to call him back to keep him, in a sense, couldn't do it. It wasn't part of God's plan. He had to become himself, as we also have to become ourselves. They are places, privileged places of learning and generosity and truth and service. But then they launch us into ourselves. And on another occasion, Jesus said, "Who's my mother and my sister and my brothers? It's those who do the will of God." So he found a bigger family into which he invites us. And that's why it's really terribly important for us to protect family life in our society, to do everything we can for family life, to enable kids to have the families they need and deserve, and to make sure that the question about taxes doesn't cut out that whole issue for common good that's important for us, not just for them. Jesus went back. He went back to Nazareth with them. Went down to Nazareth. He grew in wisdom and grace and favor. He went back to his family in order to grow out of it and to help them grow into the fullness that they were called to be as well. This is the gospel, and it's the feast of the Holy Family. And the mystery of it all is that Holy Family isn't just somebody else's, it's also ours.